You're listening to the official podcast of Asbury University, produced by students with God-honoring conversations that inform, edify, and encourage. This is Asbury. We explore culture and current topics through a Christian worldview, promoting a well-balanced life, and we empower our community to belong, become, and be set apart. I'm your host, Abby Laub. Welcome to This is Asbury. Welcome to the podcast. I'm joined in the studio today with Dr. Michelle Asbill. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you for being here. You are new to the podcast.
Yes.
And I would love if you could just tell listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do here at Asbury.
Yes. So this is the beginning of my fourth full academic year. I actually came in the middle of the 2020-2021 mm-hmm. year. And so I've been hired to teach in the social work department. Just very much enjoying it.
Yeah. Where are you from?
So I'm from the Southern California area. So I've kind of bounced around, but I grew up there. My undergrad is from there. But then I did graduate school in the Midwest. This is the furthest east and south that I have ever lived.
So how did Asbury land on your radar coming from Southern California?
It's a great question. So in all honesty, I had my sights on a job at a different school and basically was just waiting to hear from them. Mm-hmm. And then I had a college mentor from a different Christian school. She knew I was kind of on the market. And she reached out to me, and we started talking, and I said, well, there's this school called Asbury, and they've posted. They have this social work job. And she said, oh, that's a great school. I know some other folks that have gone down there and really just done well there. And she's like, you should try it. And I thought, well, I already kind of have my plans kind of lined up. But I was like, okay. So I just kind of threw my hat in the ring, and Asbury was incredible. I mean, they got back to me really quickly. I was able to, I had to do everything on Zoom just due to that time, but just really enjoyed meeting everyone and things that kind of sped up. And then I got offered the position to start in the fall of 2020, but COVID was really intense in the Southern California area. I was working in healthcare at that time, and we were just really struggling. I didn't want to leave my fellow social workers that I was with at the time. So I actually basically said I would accept the position, but I asked to have a delayed contract and to have it start in January. And I thought, surely Asbury's not going to go for this because it's just going to be much more work for that department during the fall. But they very quickly were like, that's no problem.
Tell me a little bit about what you teach here. In the department, social work department.
Absolutely. So I'm a little bit of a jack of all trades. So I definitely do the intro class. I have a couple other select classes. But really what I was hired to teach was what is called the macro trifecta for social work. And it's three courses. They're upper division courses. It is a research class, a class on policy, and then a class on social work practice with organizations and communities. And so it's just, it's kind of a special brand of social work where the focus shifts away from how can I intervene with the person or the family that's right in front of me? How can I seek to intervene on a broader societal cultural level with the goal of obviously impacting more people?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and then that does directly impact those one-on-one, you know, you think of like someone working through an adoption, and November is National Adoption Awareness Month. So you think about how that would impact a social worker working with those families. You know, those are very important decisions that end up getting made. Can you think of any policy changes that have happened that people might not be aware of that might impact that work?
That's a really good question. I think most recently what I can think of is there was a policy that was released, I believe now it's probably about a year and a half ago or maybe almost 2 years ago now, where the governor is actually trying to recruit more social workers in the country to consider working in our child welfare system.
The governor of Kentucky.
Yes. Sorry. So, you know, this is a position that historically can be a little bit dangerous. There's some safety issues. It's a position that demands quite a lot of hours. It comes with a lot of kind of emotional kind of burden as well. And then, sadly, it tends to be kind of underpaid. And so for this reason, you can imagine it's been hard to get people to fill those places. So the idea here was that if we offered some kind of school education support, social workers all over the state could go to school. they could get their undergrad and potentially even their grad paid for. But then what they would do is they would work for the state in some kind of a child welfare role. This is not just unique to the state. There are other states that also try to recruit out of schools for these roles. So that policy, social work was really, really excited about it. And I remember when it came out, we were all clapping.
So. Yeah. And now have you seen students coming as a direct result of that? I mean, are they coming to take this programs?
So the social work department, we're definitely active in watching this, and we're in the process right now of really laying that foundation so that we can start offering courses and participate in this statewide program. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that we definitely have some students who do their internships. It's a requirement here. So they do their internship in a child welfare site. They're not able to participate in like the loan forgiveness type program yet. Yeah. We did actually very recently have a student who she actually just visited one of my classes a few weeks ago, but she actually just got hired with this program. And so she's actually very excited because her graduate degree in social work is going to be paid for, going to work for the state. So yeah, we're definitely seeing some peaking interest.
That's great. So you're teaching a lot about, you know, research and policy and these larger macro issues. So important. So I understand that your experience in this was framed a little differently than many people. You lived in Bulgaria for a while. Tell me about that work and how that's shaped what you're now doing.
Yes, absolutely. So it might help if I step back and just give a little bit of a timeline because it will provide some context. Mm-hmm. So essentially, when I was younger and in college, my number one goal was to be a hospital social worker. Mm. That was what I wanted.
And what would that entail?
So that would entail, for the most part, probably working with individuals that are working through some kind of severe mental health concern, usually kind of a substance use concern. Might be working with someone who's unhoused, severe disability. You could also be in positions where you're working with moms, kids. You could be working with grief, any kind of end of life. Yeah. It's pretty broad.
Okay.
But I wanted to be in the ER. That was what I really wanted. Mm-hmm. The Lord, though, really just put me on a different course. So I got my graduate degree in social work. And then suddenly couldn't find a job. And then through a series of events that I don't need to get into all the detail, I ended up getting a master's degree in intercultural studies and then getting to pick where I wanted to go work overseas. And I met a couple that was moving to Bulgaria. I'd never heard of Bulgaria. and then just kind of landed there. And when we got there, we decided to start a nonprofit organization, chiefly to work with the small Bulgarian farmer. Wow. So there's a lot of land that's in Bulgaria that's only managed by like a family or maybe one person. They don't have a lot of equipment. It's not like big scale farming here. And so for this reason, they tend to be very under-resourced in all sense of that term. And so we wanted to work with them and build relationships with them. So we started the nonprofit on one hand to do that. And then I know they're not really, it doesn't sound like they're related exactly, but I also had someone on the team that was an occupational therapist. And her passion was to work with those that have some kind of a disability of some kind. And so in Bulgaria, that population tends to be very kind of sequestered and kind of in these isolated places that are hard to get to. So we also wanted to make sure that we could reach out to them as well. So we started this organization to do that. And that is a macro level for social work practice type work. Okay. Anytime you step in and you have an organization, you have to lead it. You have to write grants. You have to put together a board. You have to organize your programs. How are you going to evaluate? It obviously fits really well in the world of business. Mm-hmm. But social workers also are very passionate about this because we have kind of a social goal and a social outcome in mind. And so we love to train social workers to do that work as well.
Yeah. So how long were you there?
Yes. So I lived there kind of more consistently, if that makes sense, for about 3.5 years. Okay. I was in more of that nonprofit missionary type role. Then kind of unexpectedly, I returned to the States, but then I ended up going back to Bulgaria about a year and a half, a little bit more. And I was a PhD student at that time.
Yeah. Great. So what were some of your key takeaways? What did you learn through that experience? And how has that impacted now coming back to the States and working with students?
I think probably the number one thing that it has done is it has really emphasized to me the role of culture. I do teach in the social work department, but I usually teach on the side in the CCE program. And I do that very intentionally because when I was younger, I didn't understand culture. I didn't understand the role of culture in my own life and how it biased me and how I saw the world. And I just overall didn't kind of value the diversity of getting to enjoy different perspectives. But then when I got to Bulgaria, I was exposed to all these new ways of understanding social realities that were in my world. And I discovered that there were also this great kind of like treasure trove of all these different ways to kind of see the world and intervene in the world. So that was probably the number one takeaway that I took away from being overseas, was just really appreciating diversity, different perspectives, just the richness of culture and how much I learned from being with people that are just different from me and just have a little bit of a different lens.
Well, I love that you have that perspective, and now you're helping others, helping students, you know, get into CCE programs, and you know, talking about your experience in Bulgaria. What were some of the other things? You know, was it working with impoverished populations, or what really hit you in that way?
Yeah, so I think again, just for context, you have to understand that when I was younger, I was a comfort seeker. Mm-hmm. I had never been on a short-term missions trip. I had no interest in going abroad. I didn't like feeling uncomfortable. I liked being with people that were like me. And so when I went abroad for the first time, this was really something where I was just kind of holding on to Jesus and trusting him that this was kind of what he had for me. And what it really exposed to, one of the first things that I was kind of confronted with when I kind of stepped off the plane was a different type of poverty than what I had been exposed to here. So obviously, Southern California is where I grew up. I've been in some other spaces where poverty lurked a certain way for me. And I had a certain lens where I had been taught to understand the poor in the United States in a certain way. Then when I went abroad, I suddenly realized, I was like, well, I don't know if I can actually use that lens here. So it forced me to really start to explore poverty in that country and to start to better understand their social welfare system and the different populations and different groups that are impacted by this issue.
I'd say that's a very important skill for social workers to have. I mean, you have to be able to enter any situation, right, and be able to gain an understanding of what the challenges are, what the problems are, and then how to fix them, right?
Right, right.
So I know one of the key problems that you see, and this is just in the news a lot, so this is one reason I ask, but is human trafficking. I mean, that's like a, I would say, a direct result of dire poverty, likely in most cases. So can you tell us at all about your background in social work and what led you to explore this issue of trafficking?
Yes, absolutely. So again, like, I got all this macro experience when I moved to Bulgaria. I was in leadership at this organization. And one of the areas of poverty that I would see all the time, but quite honestly had not really paid a lot of attention to, was the whole trafficking situation. And Bulgaria in particular tends to have a trafficking population that usually looks more like sex trafficking. You tend to have a lot of poor young girls, gals that are on the side of the road. Usually see them in more rural type communities, but then there's also a nightlife that is cultivated for this as well. And, you know, I have to be honest, for the majority of the first 3.5 years that I was there, I saw it, but I didn't really feel any kind of pull towards it. I think I was too consumed with the other work that we were doing. But around the time, like right before I left, and this would have been at the very end of 2011, there was this new attention that was being given to this. There were a lot of Christian groups in Bulgaria that were suddenly starting to form and coalesce around this issue. The Bulgarian government was starting to pay a lot of attention to it because the European Union was starting to pay a lot of attention to it. And so it was like this trickle-down effect. And right before I returned back to the United States to start my PhD program, I started kind of really pondering this issue, and I took that back with me to that program. And when I started to wrestle with, oh man, I've got to write this long paper, what am I going to write about? I dove into this issue, and I just started reading and reading and reading and reading. And through these connections that I had in Bulgaria, again, skipping forward several years, this is now up in like 2015, 2016, I had a Bulgarian academic mentor who had an assistant. And the assistant basically came to me and said, you know, I actually went to high school with some guys that now essentially are working in organized crime. And sex trafficking is actually one of the ways that they make money. She's like, would you like to talk to them?
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh, my word. Oh. So I actually made, like, I was like, okay, we're going to try this. And so I changed the direction of what I was writing. I wrote all of my work on organized crime and took a theory from organized crime and decided that that's what I wanted to study there. So my graduate work was basically based off of interviews with a sample that turned out to be all men that all somehow make money off of sex trafficking.
Wow. That was in the U.S. or this was back?
This was in Bulgaria. Okay, so okay. I had this Bulgarian. No, that's okay. So I had this Bulgarian academic mentor that basically functioned as a gatekeeper for me. And she assisted. It would have been impossible without her. I mean, she tracked down all these folks for me. And amazingly, almost all of them talked to me in person. And it was an incredible experience, one that I sadly don't think I'll have again. But it was a great experience. And so that was kind of my first exposure to human trafficking. Was I read about it a lot in the U.S., but I was reading mostly about sex trafficking in Europe.
Right.
I did have some opportunities as a PhD student to work on some human trafficking projects here in the U.S. She's now retired, but a human trafficking scholar based on the East Coast, I got to work for her for about a year, and we did some projects assessing service delivery here. And that was definitely engaging. But because of my previous background in Bulgaria, my love for Bulgaria, for culture, it was just kind of a great opportunity to fuse all those things together. And it was also just a really unique opportunity. Again, it was just something that the Lord just kind of gave to me, and I'm just so grateful.
Yeah. Well, you said something that jumped out to me. You know, you mentioned something about, you know, here in the U.S., we think of these cases like in Europe, and, you know, a lot of times as Americans, we think of this as happening somewhere else. It's like, well, no, it's very much happening here, too. Do you want to speak to that at all? I don't know. That might not necessarily be in your area of expertise, but is that something that was eye-opening when you discovered it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely read extensively. I mean, that was a bulk of what I was doing, is being a part of a lot of academic community, and that includes folks that are working here. A lot of my exposure to human trafficking comes with being with medical professionals that are also passionate about this topic. And so they're seeking to kind of intervene in their own fields. So this actually meant getting to learn from a lot of physicians that, quite honestly, usually work in the ER.
Yeah.
And they're like the first person to essentially kind of interact with these folks. In the U.S., we tend to hype a lot of sex trafficking. That's what tends to get a lot of attention. But quite honestly, labor trafficking is actually usually what, in my reading and in my experience from the professionals that I've been around, that is actually what usually gets overlooked, but it's actually more of the lion's share, if that kind of makes sense. Whereas in Bulgaria, you definitely have labor trafficking. You might, just the geographic position of that country, you've got people coming from different continents and passing through. They're trying to get further. It would be west. And so you have maybe people passing through, but maybe not as much staying. But in Bulgaria, sex trafficking is it's just much more dominant. You can just see it.
Well, what role do you think, just in closing, as you think about your students and this world they're going to enter, you know, you're teaching these macro courses, but of course, they all have a direct impact on the other areas of social work. What is your hope for them?
I was actually teaching one of my macro classes this morning, and I may have failed in my quest, but I was trying to passionately really encourage my students to have a big picture. I think, you know, in this country, we place so much emphasis on the individual person. And that is definitely a perspective that we need. And we care about the individual person. And as social workers, we want to intervene at that level. We want people to have their basic needs met and more. However, the reality is that for social workers who are working with individuals, if you exclusively keep your focus only on that individual, you're never going to be able to impact any of the policies that are basically not only binding your hands in the way that you can help, but they're also just burdening and kind of exacerbating the situation that our clients have to actually live in and do life in. So I really am hopeful that social workers, especially here at Asbury, are going to learn to enjoy looking at the bigger picture and then hopefully at some point in their careers want to step into some of these bigger picture roles. So doing research, starting organizations, doing policy, doing things like that. Because if we're able to have that bigger picture role, we can impact more people.
Yeah,
I would love to see students that are fired up about that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you need both. But like you said, it's you are so directly impacted by those bigger picture decisions. Are there any organizations here in Kentucky that you've discovered in the short time you've lived here that you have enjoyed partnering with or getting to know a bit better?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a very selfish answer, but I very much love the National Organization of Social Workers. So we have a national kind of entity, but then most states in the country have a state chapter. Mm-hmm. I love the Kentucky State Chapter. Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot from them. My students have interacted with them quite a bit on some trips that we've taken, and I just really enjoy their work. I sometimes tend to butcher their name because I put the words in opposite order, but the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, they're also very student-friendly, and I really enjoy their work. And have just learned a lot about just a myriad of different topics. That is not completely an area of my expertise. Mm-hmm. So I always appreciate people that can communicate things in a way that's very accessible. So I think they're another group that immediately comes to mind that I've just really enjoyed. Yeah.
Well, those are great organizations. And I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that you're plugged in with our students and with all these important entities across the state and still around the world. But then just boiling it down a little more personally for these students, you know, you've been in this field for a long time, and how would you encourage students going into this field to just really prepare themselves? This is hard work. Yeah. What does it take to thrive in this field?
This may sound like kind of an odd kind of response, but the best social workers that I have learned from and grown from, been tutored from, schooled from, independent of whether or not they love Jesus or not, those have been individuals who have pretty good self-awareness and know themselves pretty well. They're comfortable in their own skin. They're not trying to be anyone else. That may sound, again, like it's not really related, but I have found that with social work, when I kind of pretended like I was someone else, so I was trying to take on traits that really aren't me, I found that I burnt out faster and that I didn't understand the work and I wasn't able to relate to clients and do things like that. But once I started to really just embrace my identity just in Jesus and just this is who I am, this is my personality. I have really odd quirks. My students will tell me this. I'm just kind of different. And once I kind of embrace that and get to authentically be myself, I have found that that's when I really thrived in social work. So even though things are very evil, very chaotic, very disturbing, they're very heavy. I found that when I knew myself, I was better able to engage with Jesus and then therefore try to take care of myself. And so I think we usually try to encourage students to really work on getting to know who they are, not their ideal self, not who they want to be necessarily, but like, who am I? And really start to get that practice. My second real quick comment would be start working with people. Just start working with all these different populations, especially the ones that you perhaps maybe are not as attracted to, because that's when you really start to grow and really start to learn about yourself and, again, kind of what irks you. And so I found that being exposed and being with different people, again, like I commented on earlier, that has been a great source of like maturity.
Yeah, those are great tips. And I bet you got a crash course in that when you're working in the hospitals. Right?
Amen. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Yeah. I appreciate it and so glad you're here.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of This is Asbury. To learn more about Asbury University, visit asbury.edu.